Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, May 15th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll have the latest installment in our award-winning Follow the Waste series, this time looking at efforts to deconstruct rather than demolish the former Boulder Community Hospital on Broadway. And CityCast Denver sits down with a Denver Post reporter who looked into the data to see if Subarus really are the favorite car of Coloradans. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then comes Good Ol' CU with Joe Uhas. His guest today will be Professor Alistair Norcross, chair of the System-Wide Faculty Council. At 9 a.m., it's Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all coming up. But first, the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Hundreds of migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border continue to arrive in Denver each week. City and county officials estimate an average of 250 migrants arrived each day of last week. Many are asylum seekers needing temporary shelter between the U.S.-Mexico border and their destinations. Denver's Office of Emergency Management has assisted around 9,500 migrants since December 9th, and shelters are once again struggling to house the new arrivals. Staffing the shelters with volunteers has been a big challenge in the past, but Yoli Casas, executive director of the health nonprofit Vive Wellness, says food and monetary donations are now more urgent. Casas spoke to KGNU while handing out sack lunches to migrants who were waiting at Union Station for their departing buses and trains.
Sometimes we have 150 people leave on that day. Another day we have 60 people, and so it would be helpful to have the donations.
Denver Mayor Michael Hancock sought help last week from area churches and other organizations to help house and feed migrants, many of whom are sent from El Paso. Denver is a midpoint for many migrants whose final destination is other parts of the U.S. Together, Hancock and Governor Jared Polis pleaded for a financial assistance in a letter Monday to Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. They said Denver has spent over $14 million since December and that the state has spent over $8 million in aid to migrants in crisis. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment sent out a press release Saturday saying that health officials are investigating stormwater that flowed from Suncor's oil refinery into a ditch during last week's heavy rains. The company that owns the refinery said it tested samples of stormwater and found concentrations of benzene that were below its permitted limit. Benzene is a highly flammable and toxic chemical that, according to the World Health Organization, can cause cell dysfunction, cancer, anemia, confusion, and unconsciousness. Suncor notified state health officials that benzene-contaminated stormwater was draining into Burlington Ditch on Metro Water Recovery's property. Officials said a Water Quality Control Division expert would check Suncor's findings. Governor Jared Polis signed 11 bills Friday that lawmakers say will prevent and prepare for wildfire responses. Polis said wildfire season has become a year-round reality in Colorado. House Bill 1174 was created to make sure homeowners are properly insured in the event of a natural disaster. Insurance companies must now provide a yearly report on the cost of reconstructing homes in Colorado. Companies must also give a 60-day notice to a homeowner before canceling a policy that's twice as long as currently mandated. Other legislation includes Senate Bill 005, which will help young people get training for forest health, timber, and wildfire mitigation careers. And House Bill 1237 will ensure that emergency alerts are available in any language. Colorado will also double its fire helicopter fleet. Senate Bill 161 set aside $26 million to purchase a second Firehawk helicopter. Firehawks, which are repurposed Black Hawk military helicopters, can release 1,000 gallons of water within seconds and have infrared sensors for night missions. In related news, the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control says fire departments across the state need at least $40 million in funding. According to their 2022 survey, fire stations say they need more firefighters, volunteers, investigators, as well as hazmat and wildland specialists. The city of Denver began issuing fines to owners of rental properties last week who had failed to get a newly mandated license. Denver City Council voted in 2021 to require licenses for rental properties pending independent inspections. Their goal was to improve living conditions for renters. Since March of 2022, when the application process began, close to 6,000 rental licenses have been issued. On Wednesday, the city fined 36 properties $150 for failing to apply for a license. If fined, owners do not take steps towards getting a license, the fines rise over a month's time, then may go up daily. According to the Denver Post, city officials have sent out close to 1,000 violation notices. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office is seeking tips from anyone with information about a drive-by shooting that occurred at the Crown Rock Trailhead in the 2300 block of Flagstaff Road. Two teenage males from Thornton were standing outside their parked vehicle early Saturday when someone in a passing car shot them. A 17-year-old boy needed surgery for a gunshot wound to his leg. The 18-year-old man sustained a minor injury. CU Boulder is seeking an expert in Indigenous culture who can fill the new position of Associate Vice Chancellor of Native American Affairs. The position would serve as a liaison between CU Boulder and tribal communities across Colorado. A search committee is looking for candidates who could improve outreach to Native American communities and support related studies on campus. The university hopes to fill the role by mid-September. Scattered thunderstorms with a possibility of small hail in the afternoon. Chance of thunderstorms throughout the week with the possibility of heavy rains Tuesday afternoon. In Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, highs near 65 and lows near 47. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Boulder officials, with the help of contractors, are out to prove that when a commercial building meets its end of life, many parts of that structure don't necessarily have to go to the landfill graveyard. They instead can be reincarnated or get a new life or new home through reuse. As part of KGNU's Follow the Waste series, Stacy Johnson explores the city's new quest and what has been happening to the many parts and materials of a former community hospital.
In recent months, contractors for the city of Boulder have been carefully dismantling the exterior portions of the former Boulder Community Health Hospital along Broadway in North Boulder. Back in 2015, Boulder bought the entire site of the former hospital and other related structures, now known as the Alpine Balsam site, to make way for redevelopment. That includes affordable housing and a municipal hub for city and other governmental services. So why is Boulder carefully dismantling the former hospital instead of doing typical swift demolition? Well, one reason is that Boulder is following its own ordinance. Emily Freeman, who oversees the city's requirements, explains more.
The city passed a deconstruction ordinance in July of 2020, and it covers both residential and commercial properties and requires that 75% or more by weight of that building be recycled, reused, or like go for organics management as well.
But a distinction for the Alpine Balsam site is that Boulder officials and the city's contractors are attempting to go beyond the requirements of the ordinance by prioritizing reuse.
It's landfill diversion and it's reuse.
That's Mike White, who works for the city's general contractor, Ameresco. Mike's role with Ameresco is to work with the city's zero waste team to measure all of the material from the former hospital that is getting diverted from the landfill.
All of the steel beams that you see, and all of the mortar and the brick and the concrete gets crushed to a construction grade level and fills the hole for future development of the site. So it will get compacted and reused.
As Boulder began the process, city officials had to decide what structures would get preserved, rehabbed, or deconstructed.
We only want to see deconstruction of that entire structure when that building has reached its end useful life.
Freeman, who is part of the city's circular economy team, also wears a hat as policy advisor to the Climate Initiatives Department. When it came to deciding the fate of the former hospital, city officials determined it would be a challenge to keep the structure entirely intact for new uses, as it had 20-plus additions over the years. But before they could give the green light for the hospital's deconstruction, they first had to figure out another carbon challenge: the high amount of energy the empty building was using. Michelle Crane, chief architect with the city's facilities department and Boulder's project manager for the Alpine Balsam site, explains a bit more about that dilemma.
Even in a vacant state, because of the complexity of the building and just its sheer size, the energy bill just to run it vacant was nearly $1 million a year. And so we quickly wanted to minimize that and understand how we could turn mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems back to minimize that cost, while at the same time not freezing pipes, so you can't just turn a building off.
After decommissioning the hospital's mechanical systems, the city and the contractors then started the deconstruction of the hospital's interior. As part of that process, they identified elements that could be directly reused for other projects. One of those was the hospital's ceiling tiles, which will be reused in a different building. The city then worked with local companies to recycle materials such as lighting fixtures, carpet squares, glass, cabinetry, doors, and plumbing fixtures. Mike White of Amoresco says deconstruction of the interior took a year and a half, further complicated by pandemic delays.
It's a slow process of doing room by room by room, ceiling tiles, right, floors, squares. So I segregated all the materials. As a matter of fact, the one material I haven't mentioned yet is what's called e-waste. So it's a lot of computer parts, computer boards. A lot of patient lights are run by little computer boards these days. So we separated all of that and went through a proper local e-waste recycler.
But although recycling is important, Boulder's Emily Freeman reminds us that direct reuse is the ultimate goal.
One of the unique things that we did is that we went out to auction on a lot of the mechanical equipment. And so your pumps and the pumps and sumps and electric, like large electrical equipment, all went out to auction. And so we're able to sell that. So that is a direct reuse. And that was just part of us being able to tell our stories, that we're dedicated to finding homes for all of these materials. You could have maybe sent those electrical equipment to scrap metal, but the best and highest order is reuse.
However, there's one prominent material they were not able to divert, and it held a lot of weight.
Like 97% of the building's interior by weight was drywall. And so you think of all the hallways and the offices. And so while we did a great job at reuse and recycling of interior things, that was still only 3% of the weight of the interior of the building.
The upside of the drywall obstacle was that it got Boulder officials thinking about new best practices, especially when it comes to designing buildings for future deconstruction.
We took that to kind of look and start having discussions about how many times does a city renovate, and can we look at other types of wall systems that might be more modular and would allow us to reuse those same walls instead of just continually sending something to the landfill.
There has been one big success story for this project, and that is the reuse of steel. Girders, I-beams, and other support elements will be used in future city projects, such as Boulder's new Fire Station 3. Alexis Vitel, a structural engineer with Golden Base KLNA that has been working with the city, says there's been industry support for the reuse of finished material, such as doors and windows, but far as structural material, it's pretty brand new to North America.
Oftentimes buildings just get demolished, and steel especially will get recycled. So that is a good thing. It can kind of infinitely be recycled as a material, but it's very rare to find projects that actually deconstruct and then directly reuse pieces.
As Boulder wraps up the deconstruction process, city officials and the city's contractors will generate informational reports and landfill diversion tallies. They estimate the diversion report will be ready this summer. In the meantime, as the waste diversion junkies await the results, Mike White of Amoresco expresses this optimism for the hospital's exterior materials.
I think we're going to hit 90% landfill diversion. It's going to be good.
For KGNU and the KGNU Follow the Waste series, I'm Stacy Johnson.
Support for KGNU's Follow the Waste reporting series comes from a grant from Boulder County's Zero Waste Funding Program. We are proud to share that last year's stories from this series recently picked up a second place prize in the public service reporting category in the Society for Professional Journalists Regional Top of the Rockies Awards. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. We'll be right back after this quick break. Guess what the most widely owned car in Colorado is? Would Subaru be at the top of your list? They certainly are ubiquitous and have a reputation for being able to handle snow and haul lots of gear. But are Subarus really the most popular cars in Colorado? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies takes on the Subaru stereotype with recent Subaru convert Anne Maria Wadd and reporter Megan Ululani, who dug into the data for the Denver Post.
Welcome back to CityCast Denver. Megan Ululani Boyanton.
Hey.
Okay, so before we get into your scoop, you just told me you're celebrating your year anniversary here in Denver.
Yay!
Yeah, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you so much.
What was your impression of Denver's relationship to the Subaru prior to you doing this story?
Well, I thought that when you cross state lines, you got the keys to a Subaru. So I was deeply mistaken when I moved here, right? I thought I had Subaru waiting in my apartment parking lot.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about, because You did a little story. You did a little digging, and we have this stereotype that we love our Subarus here. But I think the numbers might have told you a little differently. What did you find in your research?
Oh yeah, in my great Subaru investigation.
Yes.
I was really excited to look into this and see if I was going to myth bust. And honestly, I thought that the Subaru was going to come out king, but that turned out to not be the case. So I got some data from the DMV, and it looks like actually in the number one spot are almost 95,000 Ford F-150 pickup trucks. And then in number two, it's another pickup truck. It's Chevy Silverado. And then it isn't until number three that we have a Subaru, and then it's Subaru Outbacks. And that's at about 56,000. And as you guys can imagine, this caused quite the controversy among our readers.
Yes. And I will get to that in a minute, because I do want to ask you the big question of why. But like you said, this caused quite a bit of controversy. Why?
Well, not to be the antagonist. I just wanted to, you know, like I said, I'm coming up on my 1 year. I really wanted to dispel, if it was a myth, I wanted to dispel it. And I just wanted to dig into it. It's kind of like when I moved here, they also said that we get 360 days of sunshine.
Aha,
I had seen that another reporter at the Denver Post had dug into that. So I said, well, let's try it with this one. And it got quite a bit of circulation, and it definitely got people in my inboxes who did not agree with the findings.
You got a lot of native bumper stickers in your inbox. I bet.
People were definitely questioning the data and my, but I mean, it's straightforward as far as make and models go. I mean, Ford is at the top. And I had already seen before I'd gotten the DMV numbers that, you know, the Ford F-150 is already the top used car in Colorado.
Oh.
And I had talked to different dealerships. And of course, every dealership is going to tout that, you know, their car is the Colorado favorite. And there are quite a few favorites amongst Coloradans, but it turns out the F-150 is number one.
Dang.
I'm sorry to break it to everybody.
It's just surprising to me a little bit, because we're mountain people. We love to drive to the mountains. Mm-hmm. And those are not like super gas efficient.
No.
I feel like they're kind of gas guzzlers. So it surprises me a little bit that would outpace something like the Subaru that gets pretty good gas mileage. And you could put a lot of stuff in a Subaru.
Yeah.
But Anne-Marie, you, like me, have a Subaru. And I know that you thought long and hard about this. And just tell us your Subaru story.
That long and hard about it. I succumbed to peer pressure. You know, it's funny. It's when I first moved to Colorado, I just had like a little Corolla. And my partner had a Honda Accord. And we lived in Greeley first. And like for that whole year, it was like
it felt like everybody was telling us that we couldn't have cars like that in Colorado, like compact cars.
Really?
But also, okay, I've lived in Colorado for a long time now, and I'm like, I don't think all those people understood that we are not skiing. Like, we're just, I'm like, why can't I have a small car? So we thought about it for a long time. I totaled my car at some point. And so we went down to like a one car household, and it was a real old car. And so we started thinking about a new one. And we thought, okay, maybe it makes sense to get an SUV like everybody else. We have a large dog. I garden a lot. I can't say it's not useful for that. And so we went and got one, but I say it like that, like we just went and got one. We did not. It took a long time. Like, we were getting it summer 2021.
Sure, in the middle of that pandemic time, yeah. when it was hard to find a car. I heard
it was
from
like
a lot
weird
of people.
Time for yeah. finding cars. Yeah. And we like went to a few used car dealerships. First experiences, both of us, with used car dealerships. It was, didn't love it.
Trial by fire.
Yeah. And we ended up getting like a certified pre-owned Crosstrek from the Subaru dealership. But like while we were there, someone had come in to get the same car because they saw it online. Like while we were signing the paperwork, we had to buy a car that had like a busted windshield because we were like, it doesn't matter. You have one. Give it to us.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just like such a strange time to buy a car. And I think like that was probably a big part of why it's not the top car anymore, right? Is like there was a big dent in the ability to like get one for a bit.
One of the car brands that I'd spoken with had said that supply chain issues, I think it was actually Subaru, had said that supply chain issues had impacted sales, but those supply chain issues are easing now from the pandemic.
So something else that was surprising to me, not just that the truck was the number one thing, but that it wasn't just like other SUVs. Is that trend on the way out?
No, it seemed like from the top 10 results, it was definitely split between trucks and SUVs. So okay. Coloradans still love their SUVs.
Love
for
their
sure.
big cars.
They love to be able to haul up the household to go camp for a weekend.
Yes.
So no, SUVs are not on their way out, but trucks have definitely cemented their place in the rankings.
To get back to the stereotype, I thought it was interesting that we are behind Connecticut, New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont for Subaru ownership. What is that? I don't know. What does that evoke for either of you?
Yeah, these Ben and Jerry states.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
East Coastal elite coming for our Subarus.
It was like, Bernie drives a Subaru, right?
He absolutely does.
I was like,
Bernie's got like the wood paneled Outback.
It is, but you're making a great point. It's like, it is this East Coast. Those are East Coast recognizable places. And we are so hardcore about being in the West. That is such a part of our narrative. So I just find it funny that we have that crossover. But it makes sense. I don't know.
We're not so special after all.
That's the truth of this story.
Isn't this like when they found out that the native stickers aren't even made here?
Yeah. That they were made by a transplant.
Yeah, that's right.
Who's making great money off of that.
That's the real tea right there.
So, okay, the Subaru stereotype is something that people think a lot of outside of Colorado when they think about Colorado. Mm-hmm. But I think we've also sort of owned it a little bit. And I wonder if, do you think this data is going to change that narrative at all?
Probably not.
I mean, based on your responses you got, I would guess probably
not. And people still say that we get 360 days of sun, too. So I think there are some things that just stay within stay within the state's culture.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, it's top three.
Anne-Marie, have you ever had one of those wrong Subaru experiences? Where you get up to it and then you're like, wait,
nope, this isn't it. The best part is when someone's in it.
That's what happened to me. My husband was picking me up somewhere and I just walked out, got into the green Subaru Outback, looked over, sat down,
looked
over at the leg of the driver and I was like, that's not my husband's leg. And I looked up and I was like, ah! And he was like, oh, and I got back out and I was like, oh my God, wrong. He was super cool about it, but just like, thank God that didn't end in something crazy dangerous.
Yep, one of my sources for the story, he owns a baby blue Crosstrek and he says that happens to him all the time when he's in a Safeway or a King Supers parking lot. And I will say, my roommate just put a down payment on a baby blue Subaru Crosstrek. So the legend lives on.
Well, Well, Megan, Anne-Marie, thank you both so much.
Thanks so much for having me again.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all for today's Morning Magazine special. Thanks to Benita Lee, Elena Claver, Alexis Kenyon, Stacey Johnson, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's Good Ol' CU with Joe Juhasz. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.